Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan, with my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
I'm doing well. You might notice on the Twitch stream that I'm no longer in my Baron office. I'm now in our Baron guest room because it's Justin. It's nursery season. We're breeders.
Look at you, you breeder. I'm proud of you. I'm also glad to have you back. For those that follow the podcast but don't go on Twitter, Carter got in a little bit of trouble for joking around and saying, "I'm going to kill you" to someone on Twitter, which got him a 5-day suspension, which really, the positive of that was you got to run the pod account and actually contribute a little bit for once. So maybe it wasn't all a bad thing.
Yeah, I think so. I also helped prune the feed from some severe right wingers that you just happened to follow back early in the onset of the podcast. Let's just say I was seeing some stuff that that was not ideal. Though I guess if I'd been tweeting that stuff, maybe I wouldn't have been suspended. Twitter's just fine for those kind of guys. Just don't. Damon in the chat just said, "Did Carter get suspended for talking about the Cavs while watching five total quarters of them this season?"
You should have been. You really should have been. But it's good to have you back, Carter. It's good to be back. We had 2 weeks off. Yeah, brother. I'm feeling rested and rejuvenated. I want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor this week, ShipStation. We will talk about them more in the podcast, but thank you for ShipStation. Thank you to ShipStation for coming back with us.
Yeah, make ship happen.
Absolutely.
One of my favorite slogans.
We're going to make some ship happen today because I'm feeling rejuvenated. I feel like we got a good slate of pods coming up for the rest of the summer.
Oh, yeah.
Those 2 weeks off did us a lot of good. And speaking of being back, Jetty Osman got to play a little bit of basketball the other night. Did you catch any of the highlights, Carter? I'm assuming you didn't watch live because I sure as hell didn't, and I don't know where you could have even found it.
Listen, I feel like I had to wear the bro tank to show off the guns in honor of our large adult son, who clearly added some guns of his own this offseason. Looking muscular, muscling through Nick Batum on the way to the lane. Going to take Turkey to the gold because this tournament fucking sucks.
Yeah, it's less than ideal for sure. Jetty Osman, 19 points and 9 boards in 26 minutes of action against a good France team. I think internationally speaking, you got Rudy Gobert, Nick Batum, and other kind of high-quality talent there. It's good to see. As you mentioned, it looks like Jetty got on that Clutch Sports HGH plan. Really good to see that. And it kind of got me thinking. I was actually discussing this with Mike, a member of our Discord chat, on kind of what the ideal role is for Jetty. Obviously, he has a big frame, 6'8", 6'11", wingspan. Same frame and build as Dylan Windler and just a lot more weight at this point. Do you see him as more of a 3-2 or a 3-4 for the Cavs moving forward?
Jetty?
Yeah. In a perfect world, do you think he's going to transition a plane?
I just don't think he's got any 4 to his game. Like, I don't think that's where you see him thrive as a player. Like, right. He is someone who you want to be jumping passing lanes, someone you want to be kind of harassing guys in transition. And, like, I just don't really see that for him at the four. Like, I just feel like he's not so dynamic off the dribble that you really want him playing like that. So, mm-hmm. Like, and attacking those mismatches. Like, I don't think he's a mismatch attacking kind of player.
Right.
So I think he can do plenty of damage from the 2 and 3 offensively, and defensively, he's just never going to get overwhelmed, even if he has added a little muscle this offseason.
Yeah, I guess the devil's advocate argument would be that he doesn't really have the handle to play a lot of 2 offensively, or at least initiate from that position. But at the same time, I don't think you ever really want him to be that primary initiator, which is what I think you're getting at, saying that you don't really want him attacking those mismatches.
Yeah, and like, I mean, there are a lot of low usage wings out there. Like, that isn't like that big of a deal breaker as long as he's willing to shoot.
Yeah, he can be our I don't think he's going to be our Turkish Chris Middleton, but he can be a very bootleg version of that kind of, even though the reason I say Middleton is a guy that has that length, but really kind of sticks to that 3-2. And I think that's an asset, especially when you're looking at a team that, at least right now, looks like it's going to be a little bit shorter in the backcourt. I think you want to make up for that with some length elsewhere.
Yeah, I think so too. Ultimately, I just think it's where he's going to succeed. Like, we watched him kind of get shredded playing the four all of last season. I know he's adding weight, but I don't think he's ever going to be like a big bruiser, a PJ Tucker, who is, you know, a genuine thick boy. I don't really think
And if he did, it would have to be something like later on in his career, like talking like 3-4 years down.
Yeah, some of that dad strength I'm looking forward to adding. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that ultimately, if it's up to me, I'm gonna take him just right where he is at the two, at the three. I mean, remember, he was just a two for most of his career.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we had him guarding fours, and I just don't think that's where he's going to thrive. And, you know,
we had him guarding 1-5. It was just egregious. Like, the poor guy.
Yeah. Talk about putting guys in a position to fail. And like, it's not the coaching staff's fault. Like, I noticed Evan in the chat just said, don't tell Larry Drew that he's not a four. And like, yeah, I get that. Like, it was annoying watching him play those minutes, but like, they didn't have any fucking players who could do it. It was him and David Nwaba, Kevin Love.
And even at that, Nwaba missed half the season.
Yeah, like, Nwaba missed half the season. Love missed 2/3 of the season. I mean, I know you were joking, Evan. He's defending himself in the chat. But like, you know, it is like they were put in a position where they had to have him play that way, but they have enough bodies now that that's just not the case anymore. Though I will say, still pretty short on power forwards, Justin.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, you're looking at Kevin Love. You're hoping, I think there's probably a hope among the Cavs that Larry Nance is going to be able to play more for this year. We did see an increased willingness for him to shoot the three towards the end of last season and do it with some confidence. But mobility would be the real thing. And then they also made the Thornwell signing. I don't know how to pronounce his name just yet.
Za'Darius Thornwell.
Za'Darius Thornwell. There you go.
Pride of South Carolina Gamecock basketball.
And he kind of gives you a Nwaba-esque type presence. Chris Manning actually had a pretty good write-up there on Fear the Sword about what he can bring to the table. Essentially, a complete zero offensively. So you're probably dealing with a less capable version of Nwaba on that end of the floor.
I think Chris Manning in his write-up for Fear of the Sword actually kind of succinctly put it. He's kind of like a discount Nwaba, which like might not be an NBA player, to be honest. But no. I do think like he's got just enough juice as a passer and on-ball player. Like he's not going to be your lead creator. He can't shoot for shit at any point in the court. But, you know, I do think they're the defensive tools are there, and if he can just figure out a little bit more of a jumper, he is still pretty early into his career, then maybe they've got a player here. I mean, as always, come on. It's the 14th man on a team whose Vegas over-under is 24 or something like that. So,
yeah, it's 24 and a half.
Not expecting the best.
It's a good signing to fill out the roster. He does fill a need. He is short, like he is 6'5", but he's just one of those guys that doesn't necessarily have the measurements, but he's got the strength to play that position and eat some minutes. And you know what? It might not be the worst thing in the world if he is playing some backup four, especially when you look at who is going to be on that bench lineup. Like Jordan Clarkson's probably going to be part of that bench unit to start the season. You're probably staggering the guards a little bit as well. What I'm trying to say is guys that aren't really inclined to give up the ball at this stage of this career and are mostly just scorers that are going to try to feast on second units. So if you have a defense-only presence out there that's eating some minutes when Kevin Love's not on the floor, I don't think that's the end of the world.
No, I don't think so either. You know, I think this is a guy who will invariably end up playing minutes for this team if he ends up making it through camp, because as we said, there really aren't any backup four options. I mean, it's John Henson, who really is a five.
Oh, a stretch five, though. Don't forget he's a stretch five, Carter.
Tristan Thompson, who's basically a five,
also a stretch five. Did you see the summer videos of him stroking them three?
I saw his tweet storm.
There was also that. So he can't really stretch the floor, but he is pretty capable of stretching the truth. I mean, Tristan is a guy that he can hit those threes. Like, he can hit them in practice. It doesn't mean anything. He's not going to be able to hit them in the game. That hope is basically dead.
Yeah, I would say so. So really, like, I mean, it is like guys like Windler and Jetty, and you know, that's not really what you're looking for. I mean, they really are going to miss Nwaba next year. I mean, like, all credit to him. He took a fine enough deal with the Nets to actually be on a good team. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's, I think it's going to be sparse back there, especially if Love gets hurt. I will say, if it's me, this team has added enough shooting around on the periphery of this roster that I would probably just play two center lineups.
Yeah, and of course, that's just in minutes that Kevin Love's not playing. Because if Kevin Love's playing 30, if he's playing 36 minutes, it's very easy to make this roster make sense. It actually does fit together fairly well.
0 minutes, though.
Yeah, well, then you suck, right? Then you have another high pick in a very bad draft. But I think overall it's going to make sense. The only teams that really have a lot of size in the East that you have to think about would be like Detroit and Philadelphia. And Philadelphia is kind of an interesting case because they have size and not the shooting on the outside there. You could probably get away with playing Tristan Thompson and another big together, especially when Tristan's going to take Al Horford's lunch.
Yeah, I will say it does feel just a little bit like we're getting some pushback on the small ball revolution. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a lot more teams going big, and I think people kind of were under the impression that we were just going to have Draymond at the five forever. There was always going to be odd death lighting up, and I don't think there is. I don't think there's very many teams in the league right now that can force your centers off the floor.
I don't think it's going to be possible to create a roster like they did. Cause I mean, the death lineup, the Cavs ended up beating that because Tristan Thompson was able to play mobile enough and switch on the perimeter and kind of provide that size. That was a big part of how they ended up kind of neutralizing the death lineup defensively. And then after that, it was just a problem because you had Kevin Durant out there with four other fantastic wing players, and there just wasn't a whole lot you can do. And I just don't think the teams are going to be able to build teams that really hurt you five out that same way, that give you absolutely nowhere to hide. Talent's just a little more evenly distributed now, and I think that's
especially in the East, by the way, because you look at the two best teams in that conference. You got Philly and you got Milwaukee, and both of those teams, you'd kind of rather have a big dude who can block shots at the rim and maybe two of them if you're really being honest with yourself. Like, obviously you still need to cover ground. You need to be able to close out in the Brook Lopez's of the world. But like, I think we saw in the playoffs that's a different thing. Playing five out with a guy who can attack closeouts at the five versus playing five out with a Brook Lopez who's just going to have to load up a jumper.
Right.
It's just so different. And I think I remember we were writing for Fear the Sword, like season previews or whatever, heading into last season. And I had the Channing Frye preview. And I kind of talked about how, like, the guy who kind of helped revolutionize the center spot and mm-hmm. being a great shooting big, he also, the evolution of the game kind of moved past Frye. It wasn't enough anymore just to catch and shoot, because guys will run you off the line, and these guys are so athletic, especially in tough close games. So you have to be able to do all of that, and I just don't really think there's that many of those. Like, it really is still just kind of Draymond.
Yeah, and I know we've agreed on this in the past, but I really think the change in the NBA wasn't about small ball. It was more about having four or five guys that are capable of doing multiple things on the floor, like almost moving away from specialists to some extent. And I think that's what the Cavs are also trying to build, or at least that's what they've been talking about this summer, where you have two guards that are going to initiate the offense. Beeline's talked about using Jetty Osman a lot as a secondary playmaker. Kevin Love's obviously going to be used as a playmaker. Larry Nance Jr., that's something that they're really emphasizing with him. And I think the trend in the NBA, not that the Cavs are ahead of the curve or anything like that. I'm just saying that that's kind of the modern flow. And I think the change we're going to see in the NBA is teams getting bigger and bigger again, but with guys that can do everything, with centers that can pass and shoot, and guys that have the versatility of Giannis, like poor men's Giannis, is where we're going to see the league really covet those type of players and develop those type of guys rather than putting them into specialist roles. So I do think that that's kind of the next chapter of the NBA, and size isn't necessarily out at this point.
Yeah. I just think we were a little bit wrong about kind of where we thought this was going. And, you know, sometimes there is just an anomaly. I mean, it even goes back to the way we still talk about Kevin Love. You know, it's like this, oh, well, he's good, but like good offenses play him off the floor. And it's like, really only one ever did.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, we just let the Warriors like dictate our whole concept of basketball for a minute, which I get.
I'm so glad it's over. I'm so glad it's over. And I really, really hope that there's a pivot now that we start actually talking about games, because there is a lot of parity in the league. And I really feel that as much as we always have loved the transaction, I think it took another level when there was just no mystery and who was going to win the championship anymore. I mean, we can all point to, yes, the Raptors won the title last year, but we all understand the context with that. And it didn't make for an engaging year of who's going to win. It was the week of the finals. Holy shit, Clay got hurt. Durant's not coming back. Durant is coming back. Now he's out. Like that didn't produce years worth of talking points. It was just kind of that week. So I do really hope that there's a pivot back to basketball, because I do feel like there's going to be so much to talk about this year. And I just see the sentiment keep getting echoed throughout Twitter and even in casual conversations where people are really looking forward to this next year.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, it's so weird because the state of the league is like, on one hand, you do have finally some fresh blood and finally like some interesting discussions, but then you also have all this like rampant player movement. Like, I, for one, cannot figure out if the league's in a good place right now. It's really, really hard to tell. But, you know, I'm excited. I'm really excited for where this is going. But I do think before we get into the regular season, we should talk about, you know, all these major departures from the FIBA World Cup. Yeah. Namely, yeah. You know, with huge names like Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and Jamal Murray. Are you crushed? Are you pissed? Tell me if you are.
So
let it out.
There's an element of being pissed. Shea's actually one of the only ones that I was really surprised about, because he's not a rookie. And I kind of expected Nickeil Alexander-Walker to be out, Brandon Clark, RJ Barrett. I didn't really expect them to play this year. And a lot of this is still a product of the World Cup getting pushed back year, so that it's back-to-back summers with the Olympics. And players don't really want to sacrifice back-to-back summers. So that,
yeah, that was, I mean, talk about poor planning and like kind of forgetting who you are. Like, the FIBA World Cup, to my understanding, they pushed this back so they didn't compete with the FIFA World Cup.
Correct.
Which is, I mean, some truly ass backwards reasoning if you realize that. Not a big Venn diagram there, like not a big middle of that Venn diagram. Like, it's pretty much like me,
right? And like, and like David Zavak, that like, yeah, that's like, about the extent.
Like, it just seems really, really stupid to like, you should plan around what is going to get you the most engagement. And I know that the long term plan here for the FIBA World Cup is to eventually make it matter more than the Olympics, which is, ooh, it's going to be a real uphill battle. But I know that's why they want to do that, because, like, listen, you're the NBA. You can't monetize the Olympics.
Right.
Because you don't have broadcast. None of your partners have broadcast rights. Like, there's a lot of reasons, whereas you can control the FIBA World Cup a little bit more. With right. that said, Dream Team didn't play in the FIBA World Cup. They played in the Olympics. And they're still the kind of the basis for international engagement from players. Like, that's who we talk about. Like, whenever a great team comes up, we compare them to the Dream Team. So right. It's like, I don't know what I, this just feels like such a big mistake, not only for Americans, but for everyone. I mean, to put it right back to back, you're just never going to get engagement two summers in a row, because this is not like short. You're playing a lot of games and spending a lot of time with your national team.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was originally Bomani Jones that made this point, but he's the one that I can recall. If FIBA really wants to emphasize the World Cup and make that the priority over the Olympics, they're probably going to have to put an age cap on one of these. Like, if you make the Olympics 25 and under and the World Cup just kind of unrestricted, and that's where you get all the stars, then you might start to see a shift. Obviously, the back-to-back year thing isn't going to work out well. It makes a lot of sense for the United States. I shouldn't say a lot of sense, because some of these names that we're seeing drop out, it really kind of blowing my mind that you're just not going to get an opportunity any other year. But that's crazy.
It's like, I get that the main guys aren't coming, but JJ Redick's turning it down.
Yeah, we're getting real close to like Colin Sexton getting on, which I would love. Keep backing out until we can get the sex man in there, because I would be absolutely all over that. It is a little disappointing for Canada. Jamal Murray and RJ Barrett make sense. RJ is hurt. Jamal Murray's dealing with the same ankle injury that had kind of impacted his entire season, and this is a really big year for the Nuggets, so that makes sense. I don't know if they're still going to be traveling with the team. I know they were involved with training camp, but Gilgeous Alexander, that really hurts him not being there. Andrew Wiggins, as much as I really don't like him, and the last stint with the national team was a disaster, I really don't understand what he's doing there. He said that he would play in the Olympics, but didn't feel the need to play for the World Cup, which, I mean, you're not going to make the Olympics if you don't place well here. There is a play-in tournament, but ideally you want to qualify prior to that and not be playing extra basketball in the year of the Olympics. Disappointing as a fan of Canadian basketball. It's disappointing as somebody that's going to watch Team Canada on Friday live. And
scrimmage USA. Is that what is the game?
It's Team Canada versus Nigeria here in Winnipeg.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Enjoy Al Farouk Aminu.
Yeah.
So I was just looking up while you were talking about that, Justin. I was looking up odds on Bovada for this thing. The U.S. is only -350 to win this fucking tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone.
I wouldn't bet on him. I wouldn't bet on him.
Oh, come on.
I'd bet the field.
Bro.
Do you want to have a chase down bet? How about that?
Yeah, any amount of money you want.
You're that confident, eh?
Yes. That's free money, bro. That's such an overreaction.
Donovan Mitchell is ass.
Yeah, so is fucking Nikolaj Kvitfili, whatever the fuck it is. Like,
bro, look at your myopic point of view here.
Like, listen, Serbia is the second favorite, and they have what, 3 NBA players on their roster?
Who's the best NBA player left on Team USA?
Oh, that's tough.
No, so tell me.
Kemba.
Okay, Jetty better.
Better. Yeah, I mean, you look at these odds, and what's weird is, like, it doesn't feel like they've reflected any other odds to make it, like, they haven't taken any other odds down. Like, U.S. is -350, Serbia is +450, which, man, if I'm betting Serbia to win the FIBA World Cup, and I'm only getting $4.5 for my per dollar bet, I'm walking away. Spain +1600, Greece +2000. Is Giannis playing? He must be.
I believe he is. I think. Oh yeah, he definitely is, because he said that he would trade in his MVP for a gold medal.
And then you got France at +2800. Like, none of these teams are really sending their best versions of themselves. I mean, Greece is not good outside of Giannis. Like, they got Nikolaitis and they got a couple decent bigs, but like.
I mean, Canada's got a shot if Kelly Olynyk pulls out the arm of the best player on every team.
Point is,
he is a 2015 Finals MVP, Kelly Olynyk. I mean, we have to take that into consideration.
All I'm saying is -350 is like such an insane overreaction. Like, I guarantee you that there were playoff series that were way more in contention than this tournament that had more long odds. Like, this is easy money. I'll eat that chalk 10 times out of 10. My bookie's gonna text at the end of this podcast.
Well, I don't want to do a money bet with you, but I feel like we should work something out. Like, let's do some sort of fun bet where you're going to give me the field. You'll give me the field.
I'll give you the field.
Okay. You'll give me the field. We'll figure something out. We'll figure out what prize the winner will win and ship that out. And I know what I would do if I needed to ship out a prize to my good friend Carter Rodriguez, because when you're selling online, getting your orders out can be a real pain. That's why you need ShipStation.com. It's the fastest, easiest, and most affordable way to manage and ship your orders. No matter where you're selling, Amazon, Etsy, or your own website, ShipStation brings all your orders into one simple interface. ShipStation helps you get orders out quickly, save money on shipping costs, and keep your customers happy. And right now, Blue Wire listeners can try ShipStation free for 60 days when you use promo code BLUE. There's absolutely no risk. You can start your free trial without even entering in your credit card information. ShipStation works with all the major carriers, including the U.S. Postal Service, FedEx, UPS, and even Amazon Fulfillment. So you can compare and choose the best shipping solution for you and your customer. No wonder ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers. You'll ship more in less time with the best rates available. Just visit ShipStation.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in BLUE. That's ShipStation.com, then enter promo code BLUE. ShipStation.com. Make ship happen.
What a slogan. I think about it every time.
I'm loving the suggestions here in our Twitch feed where they're
go ahead and read them off.
Yeah, they're saying you should give me your kid if I win.
Well, I'm not gonna do that, and here's why.
Is it because you know that I'd be an absolutely terrible parent?
Oh, you'd be just fine. Now, Evan suggested that I name my child, or you get to name my child if I lose, but also, no.
I'm naming your child Sundarius.
Well, she wouldn't like that too much, so. She's a gal.
Oh man, we shouldn't make any commitments over the podcast. I don't think we should think this out. We should figure out what the prize will be, because I mean,
not when while I'm slamming shandies over
when,
here.
When you're saying things live and you're saying things on a podcast, it can get taken out of context and people can get mad at it, just like people did with our boy David Griffin and his comments on LeBron James.
No. Yeah, that was tough.
What was your reaction to it? I'm not going to let you do the same throw to me.
Well, I don't know, man. It just kind of made me sad. My instinct, like, you know, I think that we kind of hear people complain about the Bron hive a lot, mm-hmm. and like, I mean, we complain about it, but like,
I was about to say, ooh, we're not innocent in that.
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes you kind of forget how annoying they are until you see them shit on someone you don't like or someone you like. And like watching them like lose their mind at David Griffin for this comment, when like the way I read it wasn't like boo hoo or LeBron fucking sucks. It was like, yeah, it was just like kind of a tough work environment to be happy in.
You know what I feel like happened there? And it's not, I don't think the tough work environment thing was what people got fired up over. I think it was
thing, definitely.
Yeah, that he didn't have the same commitment to winning. And I almost feel like that was a case of transitioning from an analyst to the role that he is.
Bro, couldn't agree more.
Where is...
Why would you say that?
That is... Well, that's just like a generally accepted talking point. Like you watch NBA TV, TNT, whatever. It's okay. Yeah, LeBron has transitioned into a new stage of his career. You look at the comments LeBron made where he, after the championship, said, I feel like I've accomplished all I need to in his career. And I don't think David Griffin or anybody with eyes and a brain would say, okay, LeBron has moved on from winning. He didn't care about winning in 2017. He didn't care about winning in 2018. He didn't care when he moved to the Lakers. No, it's obviously still a top priority for him. Look at the shape that he keeps himself in. It just moved down the scale a little bit. His kids are getting older, and he has accomplished all that he really needs to in his career.
Yeah, I think that, if I can cut you off a little bit, like I think the big thing is like it's whether or not he is as committed as he was, as maniacal as he was prior to 2016, I mean, I just think this is an instance of Griff just getting a little too comfortable and, mm-hmm. and saying and word and phrasing something not carefully as he should have. Like, you do need to be careful when you say stuff like this. Like, you need to phrase it like, yeah, I mean, LeBron was kind of moving into the next stage of his career. Like, you can right. say that and no one yells at you.
Yeah, even if winning a championship went from 1A to 1C on his list of priorities, his questioning his commitment to winning. I don't think that's something that Griff was doing. I don't think anyone sane would do that. I mean, he clearly thought that they had a chance to win in 2017. Obviously, Kevin Durant going there was a blow to their hopes there. But there's no doubt in my mind that he thought that they had a chance to win a championship. Sure, it's absolutely human that once you've accomplished what you want to accomplish going back to Cleveland, that yes, you don't have that exact same edge. But to say that he didn't want to win at that point or had kind of given up on that stage of his career, I don't think that's what Griff was saying. And that seemed to be the way that people were running with it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I get it.
It wasn't a smart comment.
Yeah, I mean, think about how invested we are in like support, like contextualizing and giving Griff the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. It's not really how the media is structured to operate, and it's certainly right. not how Bron stands are built to operate. So, like,
when to clarify my point, that was not a smart comment to print in the context that it was printed. I'm sure, as he said, it was part of a longer conversation. I think we can all understand the context. But I just think, your point, it's kind of disappointing when you just see how everybody involved with that era has kind of talked about that era.
Yeah, man. I feel like I kind of wanted them to be sick of each other at the time and then 2 years later go, yeah, but that was still pretty fucking cool.
Right.
Been hearing a lot of that, and it's bumming me out.
That's the main thing to me. I mean, it's understandable. I get not loving everybody that you work with, or even if you do love everybody that you work with, having aspects that were kind of unsavory or that kind of tested your patience. I think we could all relate to just the pressure cooker that was Cleveland. And to kind of digress for a second here, I was thinking about this when I saw the clip of Cowherd shitting on Baker Mayfield, and it kind of is admirable, especially
good at shotgunning for my taste.
Oh man, I actually on the weekend I tried biting into a can and shotgunning it. It didn't go super well. Anyways,
and here I am in the tank top.
I hadn't done that since college. It had been a minute. Anyways, I was watching that clip, and from an outsider's perspective, it's kind of cool that Cleveland fans are passionate enough, even with all the shit they've been through, that it is profitable for major organizations and media outlets to kind of shit on Cleveland fans, because they know they're going to get enough of a reaction and that the passion's still there. And like, even when the Browns suck, Cowherd was still kind of going in on this angle, and you still see the Cavs get trolled and mentioned all the time. It's just, it's cool. It's a testament to just how passionate the Cleveland market is, and something that I really admire as an outsider. And I think you and I can agree when it comes to just everybody rehashing the LeBron and Griff era there. Just that we need new storylines. We need something that we can actually enjoy and move on to.
Yeah, man.
Because we can't keep dwelling on that goddamn era. Like, I am going to enjoy that era forever, and I'm still get chills when I think of the championship, and I still really enjoy and care about all of the players that were involved in that, no matter what they've done since then. I need a new era. I need something new to care about, and so that we're not just dwelling on the past, because I think people get sick and tired of it. And I hate when we bring it up on this podcast, even. Like, I hate that we have to spend as much time as we do, because stories relating to that team keep popping up in the news cycle, and it would feel dumb to not talk about it.
Yeah, and it's just like, ultimately, like, I mean, this will be the 500th time I've brought up this David Zabak tweet, which is Cavs will eventually at some point need to find a way to forge a positive identity that doesn't involve LeBron James. And that hasn't existed for the last 16 years. You know, and like a lot of those 16 years were fun, but they were all LeBron based when times were good. And, you know, I just think that, you know, I do think that there's a bit of a difference in this post LeBron era than the first one, because the first one, his absence was felt and the team almost maintained relevance because of his absence in the wreckage of it. Whereas, I mean, I really don't think the team has ever been, has been less relevant in the last 16 years than it is right now. And I think ultimately that's okay. I think we have to give this team some time to figure out who it is. But, you know, I think that's why I'm so ready for the season to start, because it's like, maybe we can make some new memories here. Because, like, even when things were fun last season, I really don't know if I have any memories that I'll remember 2 years from now.
Right. No, I completely
positive or negative. We didn't even have Bynum shooting from all over the practice court.
And, well, that was going to be something that I was going to bring up is that it is good that we are kind of operating in silence, and we haven't had kind of Wizards like dysfunction where the shit show becomes part of the story and becomes a major topic. I think everybody, like,
and it was the first time. It was the first time.
Absolutely. That. Absolutely. And even Matt Moore, who, not a huge fan of this market. I think that's fair to say.
No.
Even he said he thought that the Cavs did the right things last year from an asset management perspective. The general consensus is the Cavs did very well in the draft. I think that they're operating the right way and they're making those positive steps. So for that reason, I am excited about this year. And even though we're less relevant than we were, let's say, year two after the decision, the talking points around this team are more relevant to the actual future and the present. It's not some kind of tangential relation to LeBron James or whatever. It's okay, we actually have five young players worth caring about. You have Kevin Love, which that's going to be a very, very interesting situation that they have to manage. And there's a front office that currently has been operating fairly smartly. They made good coaching staff hires, or at least on paper look like good hires. And I'm interested to see where this goes.
Yeah. Can I just say, I'm glad they didn't trade Kevin Love this offseason.
Oh, me too. I mean,
what a bummer it would be if last season was the last thing we got to like experience with that guy.
I loved, one of the things that happened in our little break there was Colin Sexton had a radio interview, which Colin Sexton is actually kind of getting out there a little bit more. It's nice to see him getting, confidence. Because he doesn't lack confidence, but he just hasn't really been one to kind of put himself in the spotlight, doesn't have social media, etc. But he went on Sirius XM radio and was basically saying, no, Kevin Love's not going anywhere. That's my guy. Like, that's our guy. The young guys are really rallying around him. We have a good relationship. Larry Nance Jr. continues to be very high on the gets us meter, and I'm
sure does.
Happy to see that. And again, it seems like the veterans that are still here are invested in kind of creating that brotherhood and that good locker room environment that we saw last year, only with a team that has more talent and reasons to actually be excited. So I really, really hope that continues, because I think I'm going to be putting some money on that over. Not a whole lot over, but 24.5 seems really low. That's only 5 wins more than the shit show that was last year.
Yeah, I think it just all depends on how much you think Kevin Love's going to play, and I have no fucking clue how much Kevin Love is going to play. So I am not touching that bet with a 50-foot pole.
All right. Well, it's probably a good place to wrap it up. As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, we do have a lot of good ideas coming down the pipeline. This summer, we have fun announcements as well. It's going to be an exciting time. I think as the season starts to get a little bit closer, which now we're just about 2 months away from preseason, I think we're going to have more and more to talk about. Hopefully, we have a lot to talk about the World Cup. So I want to thank Twitter for bringing my good friend Carter back. I want to thank all our listeners. A special shout out to everybody watching live on Twitch. Remember, if you guys want to support the show on Twitch, give us a sub. Tell your friends and family about it. Word of mouth really helps the podcast. If you want to help us out conventionally, you can do so by leaving us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of our Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of your review to chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we'd be more than happy to send you a link. Carter, do you have anything else to add before I wrap this thing up?
It's nice to be back hanging out with you, buddy.
And on that note, go Cavs.